email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Our next guest is no stranger to such expressions as "Ooh, David," and "Best wishes, warmest regards." As author and screenwriter on the hugely successful comedy drama Schitt's Creek, Monica Heisey joins me now ahead of the International Literature Festival taking place in Dublin this weekend. Monica, good afternoon. And of course, you're an author, as in you write books, and you're a comedy writer, as in you're in the writer's room of Schitt's Creek. Good afternoon, Monica.
Hi there.
Yeah, great to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, congratulations on the book, which is called...
Really Good, actually. Thank you.
There's no thank you. It's just called Really Good, comma, actually. And is that how Maggie describes herself? Really Good, actually?
Yeah, I think the title... So the novel is about a woman going through a divorce at a very unexpectedly young age. And I think the title is about the difference between how we say we're doing and how we're actually doing.
Yes. Do you know when people say, how are you? You can't give them the truth, can you?
Maybe that's a cultural difference.
No, they don't want it either.
No, that's true. People are sort of expecting you to say, oh, fine, and you, and then you carry on regardless of how devastated inside both of you are that day.
Yeah. So Maggie is not you, but based on you.
Her experiences or her emotions are based on my emotions. I went through a divorce at a young age myself, and I knew I didn't want to write a memoir, so I had to create a kind of fictional container for some of the feelings that I felt.
Aha. And comedy allows you to go off and maybe behave the way you might have thought. Is that a good way to describe it?
Yeah, I think I relate to a lot of Maggie's impulses from that period in my own life, but I think that the difference between writing a fictional comedy character and, you know, living life with actual consequences in it is that Maggie kind of acts on all of those impulses, which was very cathartic to write.
Yeah, fun, isn't it? You know, listen, what would it be like if I did that when I thought about it? What would it be like if I did that? Now, you were together with your eventual husband, now ex-husband, for how long?
We were together almost a decade, so most of my 20s. Yeah,
your formative years.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And you've probably given this an awful lot of thought, even before writing the book. What should you have been doing, or would you have been doing, if you weren't with him in your 20s?
I mean, it's almost an impossible question to answer. And I think one of the things that's so destabilizing about a long-term breakup is that suddenly you almost feel like you have to re-choose your life's trajectory. It can be easy to sort of default into your shared life with your partner and not ask too many questions about what you yourself want as an individual. And then suddenly you're not part of that partnership anymore. And you're the only person whose wants, thoughts, opinions needs to be taken into consideration. And you have to kind of get back in touch with yourself a little bit.
And your friends are on a probably different trajectory.
Can be. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would imagine late 20s, average age in our country when people get married is in early 30s.
Yes.
Now, so I'd imagine it's similar in Canada.
Yes, it was a fantastic timing on my part to be getting divorced right when everyone I knew was getting engaged.
So that's isolating.
Yeah, it wasn't ideal.
So you like most people probably maybe would go, if they could afford it and if they're inclined, go to counselling or therapy. But you did a double pronged attack. You did that and you wrote a book as well.
So yes. I did the therapy first. I think I didn't want writing the book to be, it was in some ways therapeutic, but I didn't want to be using it as therapy. I wanted to kind of use therapy as therapy, process my experiences, figure out what I had done wrong, what I had done right, and what I would do differently, and then use that information to write a funny book.
Had the world changed? Because people are describing this as a Bridget Jones in the social media age. you know, when you were in that long-term relationship, like, technology came on exponentially, didn't it?
Yeah, I was particularly interested in the reality for such a small group of people. But in my generation, if you found a relationship in high school or even early university, there wasn't dating apps. They didn't exist. And so you found yourself single again for the first time, trying to figure that out. And on top of that, the way that we meet and date and become involved with people had changed completely. And you were sort of several years behind figuring out how all of those things worked.
How was that for you?
You know what? It wasn't bad. I think the dating apps get quite a bad rap, and I understand why. But I think there's also quite a euphoric feeling the first time as a single person that you log on and just see the sheer number of people who are all theoretically seeking connection and maybe interested in you. And it can feel like a real, a whole new world and quite exciting. Obviously, then you meet the people and you're like, well, it was nice in theory. But yeah, I think the first sense was that I got logging onto those apps was one of like enormous plenty, really,
which is nice.
Yeah, it was fun for a while.
Yeah, so you were divorced at the age of 29, but there were no children involved, which is a good thing, isn't it?
Yes.
there was a cat. Who got custody of the cat?
He did.
Right. Okay. And was that hard fought or?
No. It was pretty straightforward.
There's one thing in the book that you took directly from your own experience, and that was that the delivery man had your husband's number. Is that it?
Yeah, I guess our delivery account had been linked to his phone as well, or maybe his was the primary phone. And I found out like a month into the breakup that he'd been getting a phone call every time I ordered late night food for delivery, which at that period was often.
Right. And I suppose you were really upset that he was been woken up in the middle of the night by your delivery man.
I think people ask me a lot for divorce advice, and my big one is just unlink your accounts. They don't need to know what you're buying on Amazon or when you are or are not having a burger delivered.
And is there that thing where you try very well? Look, most people listening have broken up with somebody at some stage in their lives, and that the aftermath, and then trying to impress upon your ex that you're living your best life and that you're getting on nicely without them. Thank you very much. was that a part of your life?
I think that's sort of part of everyone's life now because of social media. We almost have that pressure, no matter what is going on, to present this idealized version of our lives where we look good and we feel good and we're doing exciting things with interesting people. I think that pressure is like compounding year on year, the more access we have to each other and the more kind of slightly mediated online spaces we have to kind of display ourselves to each other.
I'm fascinated by your career path. You know, you're a comedy writer, both for TV and obviously books as well. And is that something that you at the age of 10, when asked by a maiden aunt what you want to be when you grow up, you say, I want to be a comedy writer. Is that it?
I wanted to be a creative person. I think I always liked writing. And I was really into acting in my childhood as well. I used to like write plays for my sisters and I, that kind of thing. So it was always like a passion of mine from a young age. But I think it wasn't clear to me that it was actually a job that a person could have until I moved to London to do graduate school for what I thought would be my career path in academia. And then I got here and met so many different people who were kind of bravely striking out to try and actually make a creative life for themselves that would work. And I did the same.
Right. And then you went back and you worked on Schitt's Creek, which I've recommended it here to people. Now, some people didn't quite like it. That's fair enough. But I think the majority of people welcomed the recommendation. And it got a lot of people through lockdown, I think. Those lovely 20-minute bite-size slices of comedy were just what the doctor ordered. did you realise you came in season which? Season?
I was season 3 and 4.
Right. But it wasn't the global phenomenon that it turned out to be then.
No, nowhere close. It was this little independent Canadian show that had, you know, like quite a solid fan base within Canada, but I don't think it was maybe on Netflix already, but hadn't quite picked up steam. By season 4, people had started to know what it was when I told them where I was working, like in a wider sense. But it definitely was, there was like this exciting sense of momentum that only was starting kind of in 4.
And of course, it's a family affair, isn't it? Eugene and Dan are co-writers. It was Dan's vision, and Twyla is played by the daughter. They were very much hands-on, were they, Monica?
Yeah, of course. I mean, Dan was the showrunner, so it was really his baby, and he knew exactly what he wanted from the very beginning and always had such a clear vision for the show. And I think it was so fun to see him working with his dad. I mean, Eugene is like a comedy hero of mine. He's like a real, I think if you work in Canadian comedy or even comedy just in general, you know, Eugene's just like somebody who I've always looked up to. So it was a real pleasure to get to work with him.
What is the Canadian sense of humor, if you were to describe it?
I think it shares some similarities and overlaps with the English and maybe even Irish, maybe not quite as dark as the Irish sense of humor from what I know of that. But I think there's a kind of self-deprecation and not taking things too seriously that's important to the Canadian sense of humor. It's a little bit less brash and in your face than the American sense of humor, I would say.
Well, Irish comedy and the Irish sense of humor is having its day in the sun at the BAFTAs over the weekend. Derry Girls and Bad Sisters both won awards.
Big year for Irish films at the Oscars.
Yes,
as well.
Yeah. Banshees Inisherin and on Colin Kuhn. So, we're riding the wave of creativity here, which is great. We're punching above our weight. What's the population of Canada?
Oh, God. I didn't realize there would be geography questions. When I left, in 2010, I think the population was like 30 million.
Right, okay. Yeah.
So it's spread out across an absolutely enormous amount of space. So, it feels much smaller.
So, you're six times the size of Ireland when it comes to population. So you're on strike at the moment because you're a writer and the WGA are on strike.
That's right.
And AI is in the news again this week in this country because of a newspaper who received an opinion piece which they thought was real and it turned out to be written by AI. And one of the gripes of the writers in America is that they can see the future and it's not a pretty place with AI looming.
Yeah.
So what are they asking for?
One of the requests that the WGA was making in their negotiations was that they wanted to put into the contract agreement between the studios and the writers that AI could not be used to edit or do changes to the scripts that we were writing, and also that the scripts that we were writing could not be used to teach AI in the future. That neither of those proposals were approved, and that's one of several reasons that
That's impossible to police.
I suppose so.
Well, you see, AI scraped the internet. So once you put a script for a show up on the internet, it's available to ChatGPT. And you just can't police that the way things stand at the moment.
I think we're just looking to have rules on the books so that we can then point to those rules when they are inevitably
when they're broken.
Yeah.
If you can find out that they were broken.
Yeah.
I read a piece you wrote for the Daily Mail about buying jeans, which I found very funny.
Thanks.
So you've top only shops.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think the pandemic was interesting because nobody was shopping in the high street anymore, and then I went back post pandemic and forgot about the experience of like you go into a store and you're wearing like six different sizes within the same store, or you get a pair of trousers that are like a large and that's for some reason much too small, but the medium fits. Like these clothes are being made under conditions and in such a quantity that they're kind of for no one now. They just sort of look like trousers.
Right.
But they're not for human legs. and so there are definitely places where I'll have a less stressful time if I'm like tops only.
So somebody shared advice with you. And what they do is they go into a shop, they like the fabric of a pair of jeans, they buy the biggest size and then they get them tailored to fit themselves.
Yep. Right. Yeah. You're effectively making your own
jeans.
Trousers.
Yes.
You're using it like a fabric store.
Right. Okay. Have you tried that?
Yeah, I have. I do that with vintage clothing because the quality is a little bit better. You can get like a men's jean and then have it kind of turned into a woman's jean. But it's a lot of faff, just to have some jeans on your legs.
I know, but they'll fit. They'll fit.
They do. They fit great.
Yeah.
I love my tailor.
And you like the feel of them as well because you've chosen the fabric. They're all good. Yeah. So you are, there's Irish connections because you've optioned really good, actually. And you're saying that if it was made into a movie or a TV program, that you would like who to play you or Maggie, indeed, who isn't you.
I mean, I have named a couple actresses over the years, but I love and I'm a huge fan of Nicola Coughlan. Uh-huh. you know, she would be really high at the top of my list if she would read for it, or I don't know. I think she's probably offer only in quite a major way. So, and her schedule is probably enormously full.
Yeah, but she might be attracted to the script.
I would hope so. It's always scary to say that you want an actor to play something in your show because you don't want to be presumptuous. You know, they have like millions of offers.
Yeah, but. And Smothered stars Aisling Bea, our Aisling Bea.
Yes, that's right.
And you worked on that, and that's coming to Sky. So,
yes.
Yeah, so.
Aisling's amazing. She was such a pleasure to work with.
Yeah, a real talent. And you were coming yourself to take part in the International Literary Festival in Dublin, and it's ilfdublin.com. And you're in conversation with Sophie White.
That's right.
Yes,
I'm so excited.
This Saturday. Lovely talking to you, Monica.
So nice to talk to you too.
Enjoy your time in Dublin, and I'm sure we'll talk again.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.